Experience holiday cheer at Tanger Outlets with savings up to 70% off your favorite brands. From fragrances to accessories and the latest styles, discover the best gifts for everyone on your list. Save big at Nike Factory Store, Michael Kors, Under Armour, Coach, Polo Ralph Lauren, Kate Spade New York, and so many more. Unwrap the best at Tanger Outlets. Hundreds of brands, endless gifting options. Plan your trip at tanger.com.
Darkcast Network. Welcome to the dark side of podcasting.
Abgenommen, bedauert.
Aubrey Mason at your service. At Assignments Unlimited, we do anything, anywhere, at any time.
33 Half Moon Street.
The moment you feel a cold coming on, turn to Snellerin for help. Snellerin is a tried, effective remedy that defeats flu misery. You feel better quickly with Snellerin.
What does tomorrow hold for you? All the good things in life? Then you'd better start planning for them now by saving regularly each month. Yes, you've got a plan, and you've got to save.
Let's get together with the NBS. Save your money, yes, yes.
Save for a brighter tomorrow.
Save NBS.
Yes, the Natal Building Society is the ideal choice for today's young people, because the NBS is South Africa's go-ahead building society.
Motorists. The new name for all genuine Ford parts is Fomoco. F-O-M-O-C-O. To get high-precision parts that are made right to fit right, make sure they carry the name Fomoco.
The story I'm going to tell you tonight, taken from a dossier of an assignment we handled, is called Parson's Pride.
Here now is Aubrey Mason.
What a mistake it is to judge people by their appearance. This is a fact which has been brought home to me many, many times since Assignment Unlimited came into being. The assignment I'm going to tell you about tonight will prove my point very forcibly. It began when the intercom on my desk buzzed.
A Mrs. Parsons, who has an appointment for 3 o'clock, has arrived. Shall I send her through?
Yes, please. At that moment, well, she was only a name in my diary. Mrs. A. Parsons. For the next moment, the door opened.
Mrs. Parsons.
She was tall, about 5'6", but her auburn hair piled on top of her head made her look taller and slimmer than ever. She had an exquisite face set on a long neck. She was expensively dressed and immaculately groomed. Her eyes were big and brown, and her mouth was soft and generous. I put her age at about 38. I stood to receive her, and she extended a white-gloved hand in greeting. How do you do, Mrs. Parsons?
How do you do?
Oh, please sit down.
Oh, thank you.
Now then, how can I help you?
May I preface what I'm going to say by showing you something?
Well, of course.
It's in my bag. Here we are.
Diamonds. Beautiful diamonds, too.
To be more precise, Mr. Mason, a diamond earring.
Exquisite. Well, tell me more.
It's one of a pair valued at £5,000. The other is lost. Or rather, it's not lost, it's... Well, this sounds so silly. I know where it is, but I can't get at it. That's why I've come here.
Do I take it that the earring is inaccessible and, well, you want us to retrieve it for you?
Precisely, Mr. Mason.
Well, it sounds intriguing. Now, before we go any further, may I take down a few particulars?
Certainly.
Now, your full name is...
Angela Parsons.
Angela Parsons. Your address?
My home address is Harrogate in Yorkshire, but I'm staying at the Hilton Hotel in Park Lane. I came down here to do some shopping and see some shows.
Oh, I see. Well, thank you. And where is the earring?
At the Hilton Hotel, in the basement.
Yes?
I have a room on the first floor. Last evening, I'd been out to dinner in the theatre with some friends. It was quite late when I got back. In fact, it was during the early hours. I was very tired, and I'm afraid I was rather careless. I took off my earrings and necklace and put them on the dressing table. This morning, I ordered breakfast in my room. The waitress came in with a tray, and I had it at my bedside. When I'd finished, I wanted to tidy the place up a bit, so I moved the tray and put it on the end of the dressing table. When I'd put it down, I pushed it on so that it would be safer. But in doing so, the back of the tray pushed my jewelry. Well, in the wall behind the dressing table, there's a vent. And when I pushed the tray, the back of the tray pushed one of my earrings into the vent. Well, of course, I realized immediately what I'd done, and I called the hotel manager.
I'm sorry to have been so long, Mrs. Parsons. I came as soon as I could. Now, what seems to be the trouble?
The earring, which matches this one, is in there, in that vent. It was my fault. I pushed it with my breakfast tray.
Oh, dear.
I wanted to get somebody up here to remove the grill and get my earring out.
Well, I'm afraid it's not going to be as easy as that. You see, that grill is part of our air conditioning. The air is extracted through it, goes down to the basement through our air conditioning plant, and...
You mean behind the grill there's a duct which leads down into the basement?
Yes, just so.
Then my earring's in the basement, and I want it. It's a very valuable piece of jewelry.
Mrs. Parsons, I'll do everything I can. I'll go and investigate the situation immediately.
The poor man came back to inform me that the air duct down which my earring had fallen joined a horizontal duct in the basement. It was totally inaccessible, he said.
But surely he considered dismantling that part of the system?
Oh, yes. And blithely informed me that the cost would be £200. Frankly, Mr. Mason, I considered that to be excessive.
Forgive me, Mrs. Parsons, but... Well, am I right in thinking that your jewelry is insured?
You are.
Well, then there's surely no problem.
Again, I'm forced to be frank with you. I am what the insurance companies call a liability, high risk. I've made so many claims on them in the past for lost and damaged personal effects that if I claim again for this, my next premium is going to be very high indeed. It occurred to me that there was perhaps a cheaper way of recovering my earring. I've spoken to the maintenance people at the hotel, and they hummed and hawed. They clearly weren't interested. I contacted the air conditioning people myself. They weren't very cooperative either. They assured me that the only way of getting to the earring would be to dismantle the air ducts. Oh, you can imagine how frustrated I was. I went down to the basement myself and had a look at the situation. It suddenly occurred to me that if the grill at the end of the horizontal duct were removed, and someone got inside and crawled along to where the vertical duct from my room came down, it would be easy. Do you think I can find anybody who's willing to do that? Not even the smallest page boy in the hotel. The manager won't allow it.
Why not?
Oh, apparently some question of insurance. He has no policy covering this sort of thing.
How infuriating for you.
It's such a simple job. In sheer desperation, I consulted the personal column of the Evening Standard. I saw your advertisement, phoned to make an appointment, and, well, here I am. Will you help me?
We'd be delighted, Mrs. Parsons.
You do this sort of thing?
It's this sort of thing that keeps us in business.
Oh. You can guarantee satisfaction.
I can.
When will your man do the job?
Well, will this afternoon suit you?
The sooner the better.
Good. Let's say 4:30.
Where shall I meet your man?
His name's Cannon, David Cannon. Well, what about the lounge at the Hilton?
Lovely.
When Angela Parsons had left my office, I gave instructions to Mrs. Gamble that Cannon was to come and see me immediately. He came promptly, and I apprised him of the facts supplied by Mrs. Parsons.
Sounds pretty careless.
Yes, Cannon, but she admitted it.
Nice.
Captivating. A lady, but married.
Pity. Well, how'll I know what she looks like?
Oh, just make yourself known to the most beautiful woman of 40 in the Hilton Lounge. That will be she.
Any special instructions?
Well, I think you'll need pliers, screwdriver, spanners, boiler suit, and a lamp which you can strap to your forehead.
Mm-hmm. 4:30, you said.
That's right. Well, what's the joke?
Well, I'm a sucker for a beautiful woman, but this will be the first time I've got on my hands and knees for one.
For once, it was a short journey for Cannon. Along Half Moon Street into Curzon Street, and then left into Park Lane. Something of a record. As I predicted, Cannon had no difficulty in identifying our client. She was having tea and toying nervously with a cigarette.
You'll be Mrs. Parsons.
That's right.
The name's Cannon. I work for Aubrey Mason.
How do you do?
How do you do? Now, where's the location?
The what?
How do we get to the basement?
Oh, we'll take the lift.
Okay, let's go.
It'll be a tight squeeze for you.
I've been in tighter spots than this. It's about, 50 feet to where the down duct joins this one.
There's a strong draft in there. Do you think it's conceivable that my earring will have been drawn further along the duct towards the fan?
Possible, but unlikely. We'll see.
It only took a few moments for Cannon to remove the wire grill from the end of the duct. He did this by standing on the boot of Mrs. Parsons' car. He then donned his boiler suit, strapped a miner's lamp to his forehead, and hoisted himself into the narrow opening. Once inside, Cannon proceeded to wriggle on his belly along the 30-inch square duct.
Only hope this thing's strong enough to support me. Well, it's not far to fall, but I get pretty shaken up in the process. Now then, let's see. Not much further. What a heck of a way to earn a living. Still, never a dull moment. Now, here we are. Now, this is where the vertical duct joins the big horizontal one. It should be around here somewhere. It's quite a drop from the first floor. It must have bounced. Maybe broken. Nope, nothing here. Well, maybe it's further along towards the fan. Here we go again. And now I know how a rabbit must feel after a rough night out. Nope. Not here either. There's nothing here except an envelope stuck on the grill next to the fan. I wonder.
Puts true whiteness back into your watch.
A real white, a true white.
It's Super Blue White.
Trust Surf to get your wash truly white.
The white of Surf and Super Blue.
Deurbraak en pijnverlichting. Aspro nieuwe microverfijnde Aspro. Aspro is nou microverfijn voor versnelde verlichting van pijn. Nou bereik Aspro die bloedstroom meer as 2 keer vinniger. Laat pijn meer as 2 keer vinniger verdwijn. Aspro, nieuwe microverfijnde Aspro.
Cleaner breath, cleaner taste, cleaner teeth. 3 ways clean, that's Colgate clean. Brush your teeth the Colgate way. Help clean your breath, help fight decay.
And now you could help yourself to a big cash prize in the Colgate Dental Cream Spot the Errors contest.
Yes, there's 2,500 rand in cash prizes to be won.
Full details at Colgate Dental Cream displays. Also, big savings on special packs.
Get Colgate Dental Cream now.
I was beginning to think you got lost.
Wow. You just let me get down from up here. Oh, well. That's that. No earring.
Of course not. Where's the envelope?
Hey, now, wait a minute.
Mr. Cannon, I'm in no mood to indulge you and your wisecracking. I want that envelope. Or else.
Well, you must want it pretty badly. Do you mind pointing that thing the other way? I get pretty nervous looking into the barrel of a gun because it's been my experience they have a nasty habit of going off.
To say that the lady's change of attitude and manner was a surprise to Cannon is putting it very mildly indeed. He was shocked and not a little nervous.
Well, I must say you had me fooled. It's not often I'm taken for a sucker like this.
Please be reasonable and sensible, Mr. Cannon. You can see you have no choice. You've got the envelope. Hand it over.
Well, you know, I've often been told I'm blessed with a sixth sense. I guess I must be. I mean, why else would I have left the envelope where it is?
You did what?
That's right. Go ahead, look in my pockets.
Oh, why?
Hey, look out, there's a car coming down the ramp.
What? No,
thanks. I'll take this. That's better. Now, you just keep your distance, huh?
Oh, all right, Mr. Cannon. You've got the upper hand. If you care to examine that pistol, you'll find it isn't loaded.
Correct. Okay, now you be a good girl and put it away.
Thank you.
And suppose you tell me what's going on. Why didn't you tell us it was an envelope you wanted? You'd have saved us both a lot of trouble.
I didn't know I could trust you.
We don't advertise the fact, but we're very discreet about the assignments we undertake.
All right. Are you sure it won't go any further?
Except to Mr. Mason, and it's safer with him than with the Bank of England.
Well, it happened like this. Yesterday afternoon, I came down into the basement with my car, having been to see some friends in Richmond. I parked it over there. I switched off the engine, and I opened the door to step out.
Allow me.
What?
How'd you do?
Oh, you gave me such a fright, I didn't see you.
I know.
You know?
I've been waiting for you. You don't know me. Allow me to introduce myself. Cyril Purdy.
Oh, how do you do? You wish to see me?
I know about you. Or to be more precise, let me say, I know about your husband.
My husband?
And, the goings on.
I'm sure I don't know what you're talking about.
Oh, come, Mrs. Parsons, you're not a fool. Neither am I. Let's not beat about the bush. I assure you that what I say is true, and I'll tell you how I know. You see, I've made it my business to, how shall I put it, keep an eye on your husband's affairs. Well?
I think I know what you want. Money?
Please.
For what?
Why, for my silence. What else?
You're very sure of yourself, aren't you?
I have to be.
And you must have something to justify your confidence.
I have.
What?
These.
What are they?
Allow me. Charming, aren't they? Photography is something of a hobby of mine. A very lucrative hobby.
I've never been so disgusted in all my life.
Come now. You weren't unaware of this sort of thing?
No. But it's something I've tried not to think about. And now...
And now, here it is under your very nose.
How much do you want?
Well, after very careful consideration about your husband's income and position in society, I've decided to settle for £10,000.
In return for which you will give me those photographs?
Correct.
What if I can't raise the money?
Well, that possibility never occurred to me. You must. And if you want these photographs badly enough, you will.
What if I tell you to go to the devil?
Well, that would be extremely foolish of you. These photographs could ruin your husband. They could also ruin your marriage. You'd be hounded out of the country.
I'm going to need time to think about this.
Oh, but of course, dear lady. In the meantime, I'll return these photographs to their envelope. Here.
You don't feel so confident now, do you, Mr.
I'm warning you, Mrs. Parsons. If you try anything foolish, I shall be most severe with you.
Keep away from me.
You don't think I'm fool enough to let you get away with those photographs, do you? I'm not letting £10,000 slip through my fingers. I've put too much time and energy into my scheme. Give them back to me.
Keep away from me, you beast.
I'm a patient man, Mrs. Parsons, but I also have a violent temper.
You wouldn't dare lay a finger on me.
Wouldn't I?
He lunged towards me and I cried out. I didn't know what to do. I was alone in this basement garage and I knew that that sort of man would stop at nothing. I couldn't run to the lift. There wasn't time. He would have caught me. On the other hand, he was blocking the other exit, the ramp up to the street. And then I saw the grill at the end of the horizontal air conditioning duct. I remembered feeling the movement of air as I walked past it to the lift early that morning. I rolled the envelope into a cylinder, which I hoped would have a small enough diameter, and I suddenly dashed to the grill. Before Purdy knew what I was doing, I'd slipped it through. And I felt extremely gratified to see the draft catch at the envelope and suck it away into the darkness.
What have you done? Where's the envelope?
It's in there, and there's not a thing you can do about it.
Oh, are you...
No!
What's going on here?
What?
Leave that woman alone!
Blast!
I say, are you all right?
Yes. Yes, perfectly all right, thank you. You came just in time. I thought I was going to faint, but I didn't. The man wanted to call the police, but fortunately I was able to persuade him that it wasn't necessary. He thought I'd been molested.
This Mr. Purdy sounds like a nasty piece of work.
He's worse than an animal.
Do you think he'll bother you again?
I don't know. I've got no guarantee that he won't.
Well, it seems to me that I've got to go and get that envelope for you. Then it's up to you what you do with it.
Thank you, Mr. Cannon.
And so, once again, Cannon climbed onto the boot of the car, and from there he reached up and wriggled into the air duct. He crawled the 70 feet or so to the grill next to the extraction fan, on which was the envelope containing the photographs. He tucked it into the pocket of his boiler suit and then wriggled backwards to the comparative comfort of the basement garage. He replaced the wire grill and jumped off the car to the basement floor.
Well, this time it's for real. Well, I guess we can go home now. I'll go back to 33 and make up my report.
Mr. Cannon, do you have to record all the details of what's happened?
No, I guess the report will say how our client wanted an earring retrieved and how the job was done. Just for Mr. Mason's private information, I'll tell him what really happened, but it won't go any further than that.
Thank you.
You know, Mrs. Parsons, I haven't known you for very long. In fact, it's not been an hour since we met, but it's not often a man has the good fortune of meeting a lady. And a lady with tremendous spirit and backbone. It's been quite a privilege.
Again, thank you.
Congratulations, Mr. Cannon.
Purdy?
That was a very noble speech. One rarely finds a man being so gallant to a lady these days.
Purdy, I don't want to have to soil my hands on you. But if you're not out of here pretty soon, I'm going to tear you apart.
How long have you been standing there?
Long enough.
What's the joke?
I'm afraid the joke's on you, Mr. Cannon. You've been misled.
Mr. Purdy, please.
I'm surprised you haven't recognized your client.
Recognized?
Allow me to introduce you. Mr. Cannon, I'd like you to meet Lady Geraldine Farquharson. Well, Mr. Cannon?
Farquharson?
Wife of Sir Hugh Farquharson, Member of Parliament for West Grinstead and the Cabinet's Minister of Agriculture.
Oh, you swine, Purdy. You loathsome swine.
Well, thanks for the information, Purdy, but I don't see what difference it makes. Lady Farquharson asked us to do a job for her. It's been done and paid for. And if she wishes her identity to be kept a secret, it's no concern of ours. You'd better go.
You're obviously both intelligent people. I'm amazed it hasn't occurred to you that to print photographs, one needs negatives. The negatives of those photographs are in an extremely safe place. You don't think I'd be foolish enough to present myself and my demand bearing the only photographs in existence? One must allow for accidents.
Purdy, you're going to have the nastiest accident of your
life. No, don't bluster, Mr. Cannon. I hold the whip hand. Threats will avail you nothing. Now, let's talk business. The price is the same. You give me £10,000, cash, and I will destroy the negatives in your presence.
No.
Lady Farquharson, you're joking.
I'm perfectly serious. I neither want nor need your negatives.
vir volmaakte pas, volmaakte drapering en die jeugdige weelde van suiwer nuutwol. Kyk uit na die wolmerk op die etiket. Hierdie internasionale waarmerk is u waarborg van die wêreld se beste suiwer nuutwol, die mode se voorkeurvesel. Moenie raai nie. Die wolmerk is u waarborg.
There are always places that are hard to keep clean, like drains, sinks and dustbins. Places that breed deadly microscopic germs. You need a specially formulated disinfectant to eradicate germs and odors. Like Sanpic with Super Pine. Sanpic liquid or penetrating Sanpic spray. Perfect for hideaway places. Use it regularly. Sanpic kills germs in seconds.
Rook met nuwe lus. Rook Ransom en die smaak sal getuig. Dis Virginiese tabak op sy beste. Ransom bied u die ryk, aangename geur van uitsoek Virginiese tabak met die eksklusiewe Ransom Multifilter wat daardie noodsaaklike balans tussen tabak en filter behou. 'N Nuwe ondervinding in rookgenot. Ransom vir die man wat baie rook en dit geniet.
The faces of both Purdy and Cannon must have been perfect pictures of surprise and disbelief. She'd been so anxious to have in her possession the photographs from the air duct, and having been informed by Purdy they were worthless by virtue of the fact that he held the negatives, she calmly informed Purdy that she didn't want them.
Gentlemen, it seems I owe you both an explanation. Mr. Purdy, you have been laboring under a misapprehension. You assume that I would be more than willing to cover up my husband's amorous adventures. And you, Mr. Cannon, mistook me, well, perhaps I misled you, mistook me for the brave little wife trying to protect her husband's reputation and save her marriage. Not so. I've been married to Hugh Farquharson for 14 years. The misery of those years has been indescribable. My husband has had a succession of girls, secretaries, hotel receptionists, waitresses, typists, and girls who are laughingly referred to as models. My husband indulged himself to the extent of being on the threshold of bankruptcy. I have my clothes. I have some jewelry and a fine motor car. But in the event of a divorce, I have no hope of alimony. These photographs provide me with exactly what I want. A. They are the perfect evidence for divorce, and B, they're very valuable. You see, gentlemen, I have sold the story of my life with my husband to a well-known Sunday newspaper, but the editor required proof. He didn't believe that what I wrote was true. Now, when I show him these photographs, he will pay me enough money for me to live in the manner to which I have been unaccustomed. You, Mr. Purdy, have nothing. But someday I'm sure you'll get what's coming to you. You, Mr. Cannon, have been extremely courteous and kind. At least you have a fee for your services. Goodbye.
What is impossible in the world of tomorrow? Let us go into the future, into the years beyond 2000 AD. Science fiction adventures in the world of tomorrow. 2000 plus. Today, the men from Mars. The 16th of May in the year of 2000 plus 40 started off as a perfectly ordinary day. The school bus, on the jet number 4, had picked up Mickey and Dink, as usual, had whizzed them off to another tussle with higher education. The class in elementary operation of mathematical calculators, plus the class in early history of the first atomic era from 1938 to 1972, plus the warm spring weather, had the two boys in a dreamy, lazy mood by the time 1000 found them in the pre-research period in the school library. It was the voice on the intramural audio box that brought them out of their doldrums with a sharp snap.
Take note for the temporary incident court. The International League of Planetary Scientists has just issued a statement that an exploratory expedition to Mars is very likely at some time in the near future. Professor H.D. White, presiding chairman of the League, has made public a statement that the existence of intelligent life on Mars in a form more or less like our own is highly probable. That is all until 1200 recap. Thank you.
I guess you heard that, didn't you, Dink?
Huh?
I said, I guess you heard that.
Yeah. Yeah, I did, Mickey.
Terrific, huh?
I wish you'd please keep your voice down, Dink Texton. This is study period.
Oh, I'd take a rocket, Maybelle.
And besides, there's nothing so terrific about that report. We all know they've been contemplating a trip to Mars in the near future for 150 years.
What kind of a near future is 150 years?
Oh, it's easy enough to sit back and be content. People like you laughed at Christopher Columbus.
Who was Christopher Columbus?
You sure don't know your history. Christopher Columbus was the name of the first rocket ship to get to the moon way back in 1980. And people like you say they'd never do that.
The moon's real close.
Well, I'm in no hurry to get Mars explored.
No, Maybelle? Why not? Oh, I know what she means, Dink. They could be pretty scary, those Martians. Their ears could be in their feet, and the eyes could be in the tops of their heads, and the mouths. For all I know, the mouths might be in the back of their necks.
Oh, it just terrifies me.
Nothing to be scared of.
Well, if you'll excuse me, I've got to get to my aerologic class.
Boy, we sure kidded her, didn't we? Oh, I wasn't kidding, Dink. Did you think I was kidding? Sure, I thought you were. Huh? You weren't kidding? No, I'd like to go to Mars. As a matter of fact, I'd like to go before the expedition does. I'd like to get there first. For what? For what? Wouldn't you like to be a hero, Dink? Wouldn't you like to go down in history? Yeah, I guess so, Mickey. I'm just as glad, though, that there isn't anything we can do about it. Who says there isn't anything we can do about it? But we couldn't go to Mars, Mickey.
Why not?
Well, we haven't got a spaceship.
We can get one.
Huh?
Here. Look at this in today's facsimile paper.
Bargains, values, miracles. Don't buy a secondhand spaceship until you see Tillman's terrific values. A 2020 BG Venus Voyager, 8-passenger, $900, like new.
Huh. You see, we could just buy one.
Except we haven't got $900. Thank goodness.
Well, I got $60 I made last summer doing our job. And you got 45.
But I'm saving that.
Now, wait a second. Listen to this. 1989 N2 Rocket Cat, 3 passengers, $8,750. What could you expect?
That's our boat. But Mickey, it's bound to be a pile of junk.
We can do a little work on it and put it in shape in no time. Besides, we'll have $1,750 to do it on.
Mickey,
do you want to go down in history, Dink Texton?
Yeah, but I'm a little uneasy about going up in an 8750 spaceship. Gee, I never thought we'd get the old crate home. How's it shaping up, Mickey?
Oh, it's great. Did you get that atomic battery off the re-energizer down at the fueling station?
Oh, I got it right with me, Mick. Only Mick.
Yeah?
I feel a little shaky about it. There's no sense pretending I don't.
Oh, stop worrying. People have been doing this with old spacecraft for ages.
Nah.
Sure. Way back years ago, kids used to take secondhand rocket ships and do what they called, they're souping them up. I learned about it in History 5.
You mean they made space mortars that long ago?
Sure. Only they called them hot rods.
That's funny. I didn't know they did any space traveling way back then.
They did some kind of traveling. I saw a picture of one of their craft.
And I called it an aura bubble.
A what?
Auto Bibble or something like that.
Oh, you mean an automobile?
Yeah, that's it. Did they go through space in them? Where else could they have gone in them?
Oh, I thought maybe they just traveled on the ground.
Don't be silly. You use jet cars for traveling on the ground.
That's right. Gee, Mickey, you're smart.
Oh, you gotta apply yourself, Dink. That's all. You gotta apply yourself. Now, we just give this baby a little test. Hitch up that battery coil to the central explosion power.
Right.
There we are. Now, we throw the switch for a test. You ready?
All set.
How's that, Dink?
Gee, that's terrific. Shall I try the retarding rocket?
Go ahead. Well, Dink, it looks like we're in business.
Yep. Well, maybe next summer sometime we can cut out and take a stab at reaching Mars and then...
Dink?
Yeah?
We're going to take that stab tomorrow night.
Tomorrow night, Mickey?
Yes, sir. Tomorrow night.
But, gee, we could get in a lot of trouble.
What trouble?
We might get picked up by the space patrol. People ain't allowed to go sizzling around in space without a permit. And least of all in a second-hand job like this.
Dink?
Yeah.
Remember what my old man does for a living?
Sure, he's a space cop, which would make it all the worse for you if he caught you.
It would be plenty bad for me. But he's going to catch me.
How can you keep him from it?
I can find out where he's going to be and use a planet channel as far from there as possible.
Do you think he'll tell you where he's going to be?
Oh, he's going to, Dink. You just wait till tonight.
I swear they'll put anything in the facsimile paper.
You're right, Pop.
Anything to take up room.
Pop, you're absolutely right.
Yeah. Here comes some high-frequency scientist with a single-cell brain sounding off about how we should build defenses against an attack from Mars. What a knock-noodle. Always with the planets. Planets, planets.
You're right, Pop.
Yeah, they're all alike. Bunch of dreamers with loose bolts in their turrets. Planet travel, planet war, planet exploring. It's all you hear these days, planets.
You sure are right, Pop.
Yep. Hey, how come I'm so right about everything tonight?
Oh, well, I don't know, Pop. I just happen to agree with you.
Uh-huh. Well, stop agreeing with me and eat your egg planet.
You mean my egg plant?
I mean, leave me alone so I can read my paper.
Hey, Dad.
Hmm?
Those scientists think they know everything, don't they?
Hmm.
Now, you take Professor O'Leary at school, the one who teaches us astronomy.
Hmm.
He's supposed to be the last word on how the interplanetary area is operated. And he says that the space patrol covers Celestial Channel 7 every night in the week.
Huh?
That's what he said.
Who?
Professor O'Leary.
What a wiseacre. It just so happens we don't touch Channel 7 but once a week.
On Sunday night, sir, right?
No, Tuesday night. You'd think a professor of astronomy would know better than that.
I guess he had his dates mixed.
If a person don't know, they ought to ask.
That's the way I figure, Pop. That's just the way I figure.
Gee, Mickey, we did it.
We're on our way, then.
You sure we won't run into the space patrol?
Didn't I tell you I found out from my old man last night? Watch this baby go. I'm going to throw her into super explosion. Lower the pressure gauge, then.
Yes.
Light flat, rocket. Here, I'm letting her out.
Okay.
Oh, man, what a pickup.
Ah, she'll pass anything on the channels any day in the week.
Is that top speed?
Are you kidding?
I haven't even touched the auxiliary charges.
Well, let's have it wide open.
Oh, we're doing about 2,400 MPH right now.
Let's see if she'll hit 3,000.
Okay, you asked for it.
Hey, Mickey.
Yeah?
Where are we at?
Channel 7.
How far out in the stratosphere?
Stratosphere? Oh, man, you're a back number. We've been out of the stratosphere for a good 10 minutes now. Look behind you.
See, it's just a pinpoint.
Oh, we're sizzling by. We're cutting with magnetism. Yay!
Do it again. This is a light. This is just getting strictly out of sight and on our own.
Hey, Nick.
High and clear, free and high. Sizzling, man. Sizzling. What is it?
Take a look. Off to the left there.
Now where?
Where I'm pointing.
Where you're pointing.
Oh. Oh, smoking. What is it?
I don't know.
Couldn't be a comet, could it?
No, comets have got tails.
Besides, it's steering its own course, you see?
Miss, it's heading straight into it. It's heading...
Hey, it's throwing a static beam.
What's wrong?
Everything's come to a stop. I can't get a peep out of this thing. I can't...
They're going to crash into it. Why don't they get back? Get back!
Oh, dang, sound doesn't carry through space. There's no air outside. They can't hear you.
It costs nothing to yell. Get back! Get back!
Maybe they did hear you. Anyhow, they stopped. That's some weird trip. That's the biggest, most deadly-looking thing I ever saw. Look, what are they doing? They're opening up the whole front end, like a huge mouth. Look, Dink,
Mickey, we're moving.
We're moving toward them.
I thought the power was dead.
No, we're not moving on power. We're getting drawn in.
No,
they're sucking us in like a whale sucks in little fishes.
Mickey, we gotta do something. We gotta do something.
What can we do?
We're going in. We're going in. Mickey.
Where are you, Dink?
Over here by the control panel.
Oh, I can't see a thing. Can you?
Black is the inside of a vacuum.
I don't understand this thing.
I don't want to understand it. I'll settle for just getting out of it.
Well, we're swallowed up. What kind of a crash is this? It's like something from...
What's the matter?
Part of paper last night about it.
About what?
About how we could be attacked by them.
By who?
The Martians.
Hey, the lights went on. In the dark. I'm blinded. I can't see a thing.
Open your hatch and come out.
Who is that? I don't know. But I got a feeling we better do as we're told.
Come out.
See, Mickey?
You heard me. Come out. Walk up on the platform in the light.
Gosh, men from Mars.
Are you from Mars?
Yes, we are from Mars.
Dang it, rocket smoke.
What are you doing out here in space, Earthmen?
We just thought we'd take a trip to Mars.
Dink means we just thought we'd do a little joyriding.
There is little joy for Earthmen who cruise outside their stratosphere. This is no man's land, Mickey Turner.
Did you hear? He knows your name.
We know everything, Dink, Texas.
Jeepers.
We are smart. We are very smart. Our brains are 10 times the size of any man's on Earth.
Remember what I told you, Dink? They got telepathic intelligence. They know what's in your mind before you open your mouth.
Look, if that's what they're like, the Earth is sunk.
The Earth is sunk, boys. We have come to observe your planet before the Martian expeditionary forces strike. It is too bad you had to cross our path.
Well, what are you going to do to it?
Wait.
Uh-oh. You're going to kill it. I'll bet you my new spacesuit.
What do I need with a new spacesuit if they're going to kill us?
Oh, Mick, we never should have started this.
Now get hold of yourself, Dink. Don't let maximum panic anxiety create superego tension.
Who's letting maximum panic anxiety create superego tension?
Whatever happens, we only tried to make ourselves a place in history, Dink.
I wish I had a place at home under the bed.
Earthmen.
Hey, yes, Mr. Martian, Your Honor, sir?
We have come to a decision.
Yes, sir?
You are too insignificant for us to kill, too unimportant, too puny and worthless and stupid.
See. Thank you, sir.
That's the nicest thing anybody ever said to us.
This time we are going to let you go. But if we ever lay eyes on you again, if, for instance, we observe you tomorrow night trespassing in this channel, We shall destroy you.
We'll be good, sir.
You had better, or else we shall disintegrate you and use your energy to feed our rocket power.
Oh, no, sir. Please, sir.
Then watch your step. Now get back in that obsolete spaceship of yours and close the hatch.
Yes, sir. Come on, Jim. Hurry up. Come on, quick, before they think it over. Close the hatch, Jim.
That was some trip down.
You better close the hangar doors. We don't want anybody to see this space snorter.
No, I guess we don't. I was just thinking, Rick.
Yeah, I know.
Were you thinking, too?
Uh-huh.
Same thing as me?
I guess so.
What are we going to do?
I don't know yet.
We know something that nobody else in the world knows.
Yeah. We know they're up there. We know they're getting ready to smash us to smithereens.
I wish we'd have stayed home.
But we didn't. And now we got to face the facts, Jim.
I hate facts, don't you, Mick?
I never thought of it that way exactly. I guess I do.
Gee, if we tell, we got to also tell that we went up in the space snorter.
My old man's going to raise supersonic blazes with me.
Mine's going to blow the roof off.
But still, we got to look at it like Earth citizens. We can't just keep our mouths shut and let the Martians take everybody by surprise.
I guess we can't. Are you going to tell?
I don't see any other way out.
Maybe they won't have time to raise blazes with us. Maybe they'll be too busy getting ready to fight them off.
Maybe so. But somehow or other, I think my old man will find time.
Mickey. What are you getting me here?
I tell you, we saw them.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, Pop. Pop, you gotta believe me.
What do they look like, these Martians?
Well, we didn't get a good look on account of the lights and all.
Now, listen. You're trying to play on my sympathy with this tall story of yours. You think you could pull the wool over my eyes? Nah. I knew you bought that old crate.
You did?
Why, sure I did. Tillman told me just before I went on duty tonight. You think he's going to sell a jalopy like that to a space cop's son without even reporting it?
Yeah, I never even thought of it.
Oh, yes, you did. Probably didn't hit you until you was on your way back. So you make up a yarn to steer me off from giving you what you deserve.
No, no, Pop, it ain't like that. They're there, Pop. They're up there spying. They're getting ready to take over the world. Oh, you gotta believe me. You gotta.
Look, you might as well stop garbling. You'll get no allowance for a solid month, Mickey. And if I was Dink's father, I'd give him the same treatment.
Oh, stop. Okay. Now, will you just sit down and let me tell you about the Martians?
Mickey...
Dad, won't you just sit down for a minute?
No. You mention those Martians to me one more time, I'll see to it that you won't sit down for a week.
But police chief, well, then I tell you they stopped us. They told us what they got in mind.
Uh-huh. Well, now, look, Matt, I...
You don't believe me, do you?
You, want an honest answer?
No, I just want somebody to do something. To do something.
Well, I'm going to do something.
What?
I'm going out to lunch.
But, Professor Leary, nobody will listen to me.
Of course I understand, boy.
They were there. We talked to them. They told us.
I'm sure you believe it implicitly, Mickey.
Huh?
This is a fairly commonplace symptom of the imaginative brain. You and Dink were all prepared to see Martians in Channel 7, and so you just projected them.
Professor...
This can happen to the best of minds, and I'm sure yours is perfectly sound and healthy. Where are you going?
I'm getting out of here, although I've still got a mind left at all.
And then to, Mickey.
Oh, what difference does it make, Maybelle?
Well, I'm just asking, Mickey.
You mean you believe us?
Of course I do. Hey, couldn't you persuade your daddy to take the patrol up tonight?
What good would that do?
Well, don't you remember what you said?
What?
That they told you that if you dared to come back tonight, they'd destroy you.
Yeah?
Well, that means they're going to be there tonight, don't it?
No, that won't work.
Why not?
He won't go, that's why not. As a matter of fact, he told me I'd better not even mention the Martians to him again.
He sure makes me mad. And my pop makes me madder. They'll see. They'll start moving when it's too late. When the Martians have taken their homes and their wives and their kids.
Bart, now listen. If we went up tonight, and after we were gone a half an hour or so, Maybelle went to my pop and told on it.
Oh, no.
Oh, why not?
Because your pop would call my pop, and they'd get the space patrol and come up and... You see, they'd spank coins on us.
No, they'd be too busy rescuing us from the Martians.
You mean we'd let them take us again?
Exactly. It's the only chance we got.
But
you want to go down in history, don't you? You want to be remembered in the future, don't you?
I'm getting so I can take it or leave it alone, Mick.
We can't afford to think of ourselves now, Dink. We got to prove what we saw. Maybelle?
Yes, Mick?
At 20:30 tonight, I want you to go see my pop. Tell him we're up Channel 7 in an old space snorter. Tell him it's against the law. And he ought to go and get us and bring us back and teach us a lesson. Will you do that?
Yes, Mick.
And Maybelle?
Yeah, Dink?
Tell him to come in a hurry, or there may not be enough left of us to teach us a lesson on.
How far up are we, then? Just about where we saw him last night, then.
Oh, gee.
Listen, do you hear a knock in the motor?
That's not a knock in the motor. That's a knock in my knees.
Oh, you gotta be brave, then. You gotta realize that we gotta save the world.
That's what I keep telling my knees. But they won't listen.
Mick, they threw the static beam again. We stopped. Look, to the left. Here they come. Here they come, think they've seen us.
Missy?
Yeah. They're opening up, Dink. We're gone in. We're gone in.
Oh, I wish we'd taken our money and bought a vacant lot.
For what?
We could have dug a hole and pulled the ground in after it.
So you have come back, huh? We shall give you a welcome you won't soon forget. Open your hat and come out.
We just thought we'd come up and see you again.
You're fine.
Oh, no, sir.
Sure, that's fine. What else? You should have caught wise and listened to me. Quiet, Burrow.
Hard to warn. Why did we knock him off last night when we had the chance?
That'll do, Burrow.
It's getting the worst right off the bat.
Gee, I never thought men from Mars talked like that.
Burrow happens to come from South Mars.
From South Mars is a place I wouldn't want to be.
You don't have to worry, Earthmen. You'll never be anywhere again.
What?
You're going to spend the rest of your lives nowhere.
Please, mister, what do you mean?
I mean we're going to wreck your rocket power and then shoot you out into space. And you'll just hang up there from here on out.
No.
What's the matter? You'll like it. It'll be very quiet.
Oh, I want my pop.
You won't see your pop no more, but your pop will see you.
How?
Oh, you look up in the sky, and there you'll be, a new star. Who knows? Maybe you'll make a wish on you. We're giving these creatures too much time. Disintegrate their rockets, Burrow.
Sure thing.
Mick, they're smashing our power.
Your power is smashed. All right, Burrow, we'll open our hatch. Then give them the projector pulse. Aim them away from Earth, out into nowhere, where they can stay for the rest of their lives, for the rest of eternity.
Thanks, Rocky. What's that?
Something close with the audio mark.
Who took our wavelength?
Turn up the speaker, let's see.
Chief of Police Weldon. Boeing spaceship in Channel 7. Help and galvanize it. They spotted it. Do not attempt any movement of any kind. We have you surrounded on a 10,000-mile radius. Cut your power before we smash it with a multiplex charger. We will board you in 90 seconds. Check out.
Mickey. Here we are, Pop. Here we are.
Oh, thank heaven. Thank heaven. Are you okay?
We're okay, Mr. Turner.
Oh, good.
Only if you hadn't come when you did, we would have been just one more star in the sky.
You have no authority here. Earthmen, we are subjects of Mars.
Go on, Vince Bucky. I know you and your one-cylinder pal, Bugsy Moe. You're men from Mars like I'm a turbojet transport. You're hijackers laying out here on this planetary roost, waiting to knock off a few uranium cargo ships as they come back from the lunar mines.
There must be some mistake. I told you to knock off those brats one enough and was good. Just because you knew one was a space cop son and the other kid was his pal.
You're mighty lucky he didn't listen to you, Merrill. As it is, you're in for plenty of trouble. But if you were to touch one of these kids, you'd have had to land out from Mars and stay there.
Everything all right, Officer Turner?
Right, Chief. Nothing left to do but commandeer these rats and their spaceships.
I arrest you on my authority as Chief of the Space Patrol. Take a minute.
And you two kids are coming back to Earth, where you're gonna get exactly what you deserve.
Nick, half for you and half for Dink.
Gee, thanks.
Only hurry up and eat it before the torchlight parade begins. They're going to carry you on their shoulders to the square, and the mayor's going to make a speech, and, oh, it's going to be wonderful.
Gee, it sure is great. I didn't expect anything like this. Terrific, huh, Miss? I said terrific, huh?
Oh, I don't know.
What's the matter with you?
Well, after all, what we started out to do was to go to Mars. I guess you forgot that.
Yeah, I know, Miss.
It turned out okay, I guess. But what we did won't get us a place in history. We still ain't gonna be nobody to generations to come.
But this chocolate pie tastes awful good to the generation that's already here.
Next week, another exciting story from the world of tomorrow. 2000 Plus presents The Diamond Helmet. 2000 Plus is produced by Sherman H. Dreyer and Robert Wen Olsen. In today's story, Ronnie List played Mickey, Ronnie Jacoby was Dink, Colette McMahon was Maybell, Ed Latimer was the father, John Griggs was Bocce, and Sandy Bickert was Murrow. Script by Peter Berry. The orchestra was conducted by Emerson Buckley, music composed by Elliot Jacoby. Sound effects by Walt Shaver and Adrian Penner. This is Bob Emmerich speaking. This program came to you from New York.
Into his American adventures comes Bulldog Drummond. I sit here in the boat as it skims over the lake toward the mainland. Once again, I turn to look back at the fire raging on the island. And I think of that flame-swept place as a funeral pyre. And now that it's finished, I think, too, of the strange adventure, how it began. Unlike the usual coming events, the adventures I find myself in do not, as a rule, cast their shadows before them. This one, for example, had a tight enough beginning, the bear buzzer. The buzzer stopped, And a moment later, Denny came into the library.
Captain Drummond, the young lady is here.
The young lady? What are you talking about, Denny? What young lady?
You appear surprised, sir.
Well, I am.
But she said you were expecting her.
That, Denny, is news to me. What's her name?
She wouldn't say. She's all rather strange. I wonder...
Drummond, I'd like to speak to you.
Oh. Well, now that you're here, suppose you begin. I suggest you start by offering your name.
Well, I'd like this to be confidential, if it's possible.
I assure you, Denny's presence will in no way violate your desired confidence.
All right, Captain Drummond. I'm Helen Sandy.
I take it by that ring on your hand that it's Mrs. Sandy.
Yes, Mrs. Victor Sandy.
Go on.
Well, about my husband, Victor. That's what I can see.
What about your husband?
He's jealous.
Well, that's not so unusual in the case where a wife is as attractive as you are.
He'd like to see me dead.
Oh, that's jealous, huh?
Yes, there's no basis for it. It's just his imagination. I was up at our place at Crystal Lake. There was an island out in the lake. And some of Victor's associates and friends came up for the weekend. Everything was going on all right, but
then... And I suppose that Mr. Sanders raised some sort of scene. I mean, that's the usual thing.
No. Victor wasn't there. He was at the sanitarium.
Sanitarium?
Yes. My husband was confined to a mental hospital at Millbrook 6 months ago. Victor had a complete mental and nervous collapse. The doctor said it was severe paranoia or something like that. In recent weeks, he's become progressively worse. When I went to see him last Tuesday, the attendant left the room for a while. When he's gone, Victor tried to kill me. He was like a mad animal. He tried to choke me. He said that I let him put away so I could get rid of him and could marry someone else. If the opinion hadn't come back in time, I think I would have been dead.
Well, I can well understand your being upset this way, Mr. Sanders, but you don't seem to be in any apparent danger now. You don't need me. As long as your husband is confined to the sanitarium, you're perfectly safe.
Oh, no, that's just it, Captain Drummond. That's why I came right to you.
What do you mean?
Well, while I was up at the island at Crystal Lake, I received a telephone call. It was Victor. He said he was going to kill me.
But I say, how could he phone you from the sanitarium? I don't imagine they'd allow him.
After he hung up, I called a check. Victor escaped from the Millbrook Sanitarium tonight. That's why. Turn just ahead.
You better slow down a bit more, Denny.
Yes, sir. Yeah, what a beastly night. How much farther now?
Well, it's about a mile to the lake from here.
You know, I still think, Captain Drummond, that Mrs. Sanders would have been much safer back in town.
As long as we're with her, she'll be all right.
Yes, but you seem to be so sure that her husband is somewhere up here.
Quite sure.
Well, isn't that exposing her to unnecessary danger, sir?
It's also a sure way of capturing Sanders before he does any damage. It's the matter of Ralph Conway, Denny, Sanders' former partner. He's at the island. You remember Mrs. Sanders told us that her husband thinks she had him confined so she could eventually marry Conway.
But it's his imagination. That's part of his sickness.
I know, but to your husband, Mrs. Sanders, that twisted thought is a living reality.
Oh, well, then you think he'll kill Ralph, too?
I think he might try. Of everything you've told me, I'm as concerned about Ralph Conway's safety as I am about yours.
Sir!
Denny, what's wrong? Why did you stop?
Look, sir, in the road ahead.
It's a man lying there. What do you look like?
Come on, Denny.
Yes, sir.
You wait here, Mrs. Sanders.
All right.
I say, Captain Drummond, is he...
No, he's just unconscious. Here, help me pop him up.
Yes, sir.
George Lawson, Millbrook Sanitarium.
Millbrook Sanitarium?
Hmm. Evidently by the uniform he's wearing, he's one of the sanitarium guards.
I say, look, he's coming too, sir.
Who are you? We were driving along and we found you here in the road.
He got away from me, eh?
I'm going to find him. I've got to
have witnesses, have you?
Oh, now, you don't understand.
On the contrary, I do understand.
Huh? I took the liberty of looking through your identification, Lawson. You are from the Millbrook Sanitarium. You are here in these mountains to track down Victor Sanders.
Yeah, that's right, but how did you know?
Oh, Captain Drummond and I are here for the same reason.
Captain Drummond?
Yes, I'm working in Mrs. Sanders' behalf.
Well, then you know about him. You know all about Victor Sanders.
Yes.
I say, what happened to you, Lawson?
Well, we had an idea that Sanders would head for the island at Crystal Lake. I broke up with 11. As I came up the road, I saw somebody run across in front of my car. I was dead sure it was Sanders. He was wearing the white suit he took off the attendant he knocked out back at the sanitarium. Well, I stopped the car, and when I got out, I got it over the head. Then when I woke up, you two were here.
It must have been Sanders, sir.
Undoubtedly. I've got to nab him before somebody gets hurt.
Or you won't get very far alone, Lawson.
What do you mean?
Your car is gone.
What?
Look for yourself.
Sign up. Yeah, it's gone, all right.
We're on our way to the island in Crystal Lake. You are welcome to come along with us.
Well, that's the spot I was headed for anyway.
Well, let me give you a hand.
Well, I can pick it up. Okay, now. All right, then. Let's get back to the car. You know, Captain Drummond, something just occurred to me.
What's it?
If it was Sanders, if not Bob, you're out, then he may have reached the island by this time.
He may have.
Yes, and that means we may arrive there too late to save Ralph Conway.
You get in the back seat, Lawson.
Right.
Captain Drummond.
What is it, then?
Look, sir. In the front seat. She's not here. Mrs. Sanders is gone.
Adam Sanders has disappeared. He searched the woods alongside the road, but not a sign of her anywhere. The darkness of the night and the heavy downpour finally forced us to give up. Then George Lawson, the sanitarium guard, and Denny and I got into the car and drove on to Crystal Lake. At a mooring, we hired a boat and nosed it out into the darkness toward the center of the lake. And then, through the windswept rain, we made out the faint glimmer of the lights of the island.
There's the island ahead, Drummond.
Yes.
Denny?
Yes, sir.
They're coming to it.
Yes, I see, sir. That red one over to the right must be the dark light.
Stay where you are. One move and I'll blow your head off. You're a secretary and you're not wanted.
Yes, because you're holding Madam Mitchell quite evident.
Why did you come here?
We're looking for Victor Sanders. We believe
you. You won't find Victor. He's free now. No one will ever find my son.
My say, sir, she's Sanders' mother.
Your daughter-in-law neglected to mention you, Mrs. Sanders.
Oh, so Helen calls you in. Well, it won't do her any good. She's schemed enough against my Victor. But now he's free. She can't hurt him anymore. And you won't find him. I'll see that you don't. I have seen that no one will ever find my boy. Get out of the boat. You're coming with me. And if you don't do as I say, I promise you I'll blow you both to pieces. Now, come on.
Denny and I stepped onto the wharf. As I got out of the boat, I saw Lawson huddled on the floor under the column. Luckily, unseen by Victor Sanders' mother, he dropped down there at the right moment. With a shotgun at my back, Denny and I were escorted off the wharf and along a path that twisted in and out among the trees. As we made our way, I anxiously awaited the moment for Lawson to come along and save the situation. And then, the moment came.
I say, Captain Gunn, that was a shot, a gunshot.
It certainly was, Denny.
But
a lucky shot for us. Look around. Sanders' mother is no longer with us.
She's gone. But she was right behind us a moment ago.
Obviously, the shot frightened her off.
I don't understand. What is this all about?
Wait.
What now?
Look down the path.
I see it's a man. He's running toward us. Sir, it must be Lawson. Oh, now I get it. Lawson fired that shot.
No, Denny. That man coming this way isn't Lawson. Have your automatic ready.
It is, right. You, Captain Drummond?
Yes. And I suggest you stand right where you are.
Unless, of course, you care to see how this gun I'm holding works.
Oh, no, you don't understand.
That, my friend, is the understatement of the week.
Well, my name is Conway, Ralph Conway.
Oh?
Helen told me she was getting your help. I've been waiting for you to come. I saw that crazy mother of Victor's take you away from the wharf. I was hiding in the bushes nearby.
Then you fired that shot, Mr. Conway.
No, it was Saunders. He did it.
Saunders is here?
He fired at me. I saw him through the trees. He was wearing a white suit.
A white suit, Denny. The one he took from the sanitarium attendant.
Oh, Denny, sir. Saunders is on the island.
Captain Drummond, you've got to stop him. You've got to stop him before he kills me. If you don't find Saunders, I'll never get off this island alive.
Conway led us to the main house on the island. In the huge pine-boarded living room, he sat in a chair opposite me, wringing his hands nervously.
Captain Drummond, I don't see what good all these questions will do. Don't you understand? If you don't get me off this island, I'll be killed by that madman.
You'll be all right, Conway. Denny is in the other room calling the police. Now, about the other guests who were here.
I told you, they all left when they heard that Mr. Saunders had escaped.
But you remained. Why?
Well, Helen said she was coming back. I was waiting for her to return with you. If I had known that Helen wasn't coming back...
Mrs. Saunders was on her way here with me.
What do you mean?
She disappeared.
What?
You see, we made a stop coming up the mountain road. Helen Saunders was in my car, but when I returned to the car, she was gone.
Victor, he did it. He got to her. And now he's here and I'm next. You've got to get me out of here. You've got to get me away from this island. Don't you see? I'm next.
I told you, Denny, is calling
the... The telephone line was dead. I checked outside. The wires have been cut. It was Victor. He's making sure I don't get out of here alive.
Any sign of Lawson yet, sir?
None.
I wonder what happened to him.
He's probably scouting the island for Saunders.
Really, sir, this case has more disappearing acts than a magician's convention. First Helen Saunders, then her mother-in-law, now Lawson.
I have a fairly good idea where we can find Victor's mother.
Where, sir?
Conway here tells me that she has a small house on the other side of the island. She hasn't left this island for years.
Captain Drummond.
What's wrong?
Victor.
Come on, Denny. Conway, you stay right here.
I said, what is it, sir?
Hurry. We've got to get outside.
Oh, what happened?
Conway saw someone at the window. I got a glimpse just as he moved out of view. He was wearing a white suit.
Saunders?
Yes. Now watch yourself, Denny. You may be hiding in those bushes alongside of the house there. Come on, we'd better skirt around through these trees. Hold it.
What is it, sir?
Look over there at the rear of the house.
I see him, sir. He's turning now.
Yes, coming back this way. Stay low.
He's getting closer. What should we do, sir?
I'm going to try a tackle. In case I miss, have the automatic ready.
It'll be ready in any case, sir.
Down, Denny. Shots came from behind us, Denny.
But Saunders...
Come on. We're two now. Right ahead where our last one Saunders came toward us.
Yes, but if those shots came from behind us, who could have fired them? Saunders was in front of us. It couldn't have been me.
No, Denny, it wasn't Saunders.
Oh, dear, this gets more confounding every minute. We see Saunders, then those shots go off, and Saunders disappears like arrows. What does it all mean, sir?
Well, there, Denny, is part of the answer.
Eh?
This body in the bushes over here.
I see a white suit, Captain Drummond. It's Saunders.
Yes, Denny, Saunders. And he's dead. Come on, Conway, this way out to the foyer. Saunders' body is there.
Oh, those shots, you killed him. You stopped him from getting to me. Oh, Captain Drummond, I owe you everything. You just name it. You can have anything you want.
You don't owe me a thing, Conway.
But you saved my life.
I didn't fire the shots that killed Saunders. Whatever debt you feel you may owe, it's certainly not to me.
Well, Mr. Conway, your troubles are over.
So I was telling him, Denny. But he's hard to convince.
Well, he can see now for himself. There's the body of the proof in that chair over there. Well, Mr. Conway.
You fools. You stupid idiotic fools.
What's wrong, Conway?
What's wrong? That body there. That isn't Saunders. That isn't Victor Saunders at all.
The dead man in the white suit wasn't Victor Saunders. Conway told him he'd never seen him before. He waited in the house a while, hoping Lawson would turn up, but Lawson didn't turn up. There was nothing left to do now but get Conway off the island as quickly as possible. He left the house and walked down the path toward the wharf. Well, you could stop worrying, Conway. There's the dock just ahead.
What about us,
sir?
Aren't we going to clear this matter up?
We are, Denny. We'll have a much better chance in the clear light of morning. We'll return here then.
Captain Dover!
Sir! They're coming for us.
There she is, coming up from the wharf.
Well, Helen! Helen!
Captain Dover! Oh, Ralph!
Helen, you're all right.
Yes, Ralph, I'm all right.
Well, Mrs. Sanders, this is a surprise.
Oh, we thought that Victor had killed you.
How did you get here, Mrs. Sanders?
I rode it over about 10 minutes ago, but I didn't expect to find you here.
Why not?
There weren't any boats tied up at the wharf.
But we didn't have boats in the morning.
Then he must have taken yours just as he did mine.
What are you talking about?
After I tied my boat, I started up this side of the house. Then I heard the motor start up. I rushed back to the wharf just in time to see the boat pull out into the darkness.
Oh, he's trapped us here. We're caught. We'll never get off this island alive, won't you?
Mr. Conway is convinced that your husband is here, Mrs. Sanders.
I know he's here.
And what makes you so sure?
The fact that you're here, Captain Drummond. He came over with you.
With me? What are you talking about?
I ran out on you before because I was afraid. When you left the car to help that man lying in the road, that's when it happened.
Go on. What happened?
When you lifted him up, I saw his face in the headlight beam. It was my husband, Victor Sanders.
Lawson? So that's what happened.
Yes, Denny, it was a trick. The man in the white suit was Lawson. Sanders evidently knocked Lawson out and then took his clothes and identification. And then Lawson must have regained consciousness and come here to the island to track him down.
And that madman, Sanders, was in the boat with us. Why, you were certainly fortunate, sir.
Up to this point. But now we're sure Sanders is on this island and it's at least 4 hours to dawn.
And I'm not waiting until dawn. I'm getting back to the mainland. I'm getting back.
I have to swim it.
Conway, wait. Conway! Come on, Denny.
Conway. Sir, we've got to get him back to the house and see what we can do for him.
No, Denny, there's nothing anyone can do now. Conway's dead. The storm faded and died. The night was still. And then through the trees we saw the dawn rise slowly out of the east. We all sighed a sigh of deep relief as the pearl gray light grew brighter. I sent Denny down to the wharf to signal any early morning fishermen who might pass by. In the meantime, I was anxious to settle the main business at hand, murder.
The house Victor's mother lived in is just on the other side of this hill.
You're sure, Mrs. Sanders, you don't mind coming along?
I'd do anything to help, Captain Dummond. But if you do get Victor, what will happen to him?
He'll be put away. Only this time in a state institution.
Oh.
He'll never bother you again.
It's just been terrible.
Well, with a bit of luck, it'll be over soon.
Where's the house, Captain Drummond? At the bottom of the hill.
All right. You wait here till I return.
But please be careful, Captain Drummond.
I made my way down the hill carefully, shielding myself behind the trees and high bushes. I managed to get within about 20 yards of the small frame house. Then there was an open clearing. I dashed quickly across the unprotected opening and stood up close alongside the wall of the house. There was a window a foot or so away. I looked in, and there he was, sitting at a table. I worked my way around to the front door, waited a moment. Then I grabbed the knob, turned it, door pushed in.
Stay where you are, Sanders.
What?
What?
If you so much as move a finger, this automatic goes off.
Roman.
Stand up. Keep your hands out where I can see them, Sanders.
Sanders. What's the matter with you, Drummond? What are you calling me Sanders for?
You can drop the act.
Now, look, I don't know where you get your ideas from. I'm being paid to track a guy down. I trailed him to this shack. I was just looking through some of the stuff laying around here. There, you can see. Don't take another step, Sanders. What's the matter with you? You're crazy.
No, but you are. Stark, raving mad.
Oh, now, wait a minute. Let me explain, will you?
You won't let
me
explain anything, Victor.
Helen, Mrs. Sanders, I told you to wait up on the hill for me.
And so you did, Captain Drummond. But I decided it was best for me to be here. Now, you'd better drop that gun.
What?
Unless you want me to fire mine into the back of your head.
Well, one of those things.
Yes, that's right. Now, drop it.
Nice work, Helen. You came in just in time.
I arranged it that way, Victor.
You're a smart girl, Helen.
Well, you can give your mother the signal now.
Yeah, sure. Looks as if I walked into something unpleasant.
Yes.
Experience holiday cheer at Tanger Outlets with savings up to 70% off your favorite brands. From fragrances to accessories and the latest styles, discover the best gifts for everyone on your list. Save big at Nike Factory Store, Michael Kors, Under Armour, Coach, Polo Ralph Lauren, Kate Spade New York, and so many more. Unwrap the best at Tanger Outlets. Hundreds of brands, endless gifting options. Plan your trip at Tanger.com.
Good.
Well, it's all set, Helen. She got the signal. She's starting in.
Good. And the wind's blowing in just the right direction.
Hey, Drummond here looks sort of puzzled, doesn't he?
You put it mildly, Sanders.
Maybe I should let him in on it a little for all his trouble, hey, Helen?
All right, sister. Go ahead.
Now, look, Drummond, I'm no crazier than you are. Maybe just a little foxy, but not crazy. I put on an act to get into the Millbrook Sanitarium. There was a stock swindle. I came close to getting caught it, and I figured if I was in a mental institution, they couldn't touch me. So I acted my way into one. Then while I'm away, Helen brings me the news that lousy double-crossing partner of mine, Conway, was trying to pull a fast one. So I had to get out and take care of him before he sold me that one.
And you took care of him.
Just like I'll do to anybody who stands in my way. Larson was getting too close for my comfort.
So he had to go, too?
That's right. And now you've got the story, but you're not going to be able to tell it to anybody. When I signaled my mother out the window a minute ago, she started a fire in the woods. My mother's kind of peculiar like that. She's like a kid, just loves to start fires. So pretty soon this whole island will be on fire, and you and that stooge of yours are going to be here to enjoy it. Helen and I have a boat waiting for us in a cove back of the hill. And that's all there is to it. Is that right, Helen?
No, Victor. No, there's more.
Oh, what's that?
The part I didn't tell you.
What are you talking about?
You're staying here with Drummond, Victor.
Huh?
Conway wasn't double-crossing you, Victor. He wasn't double-crossing you at all.
What?
I just told you that. So you'd break out of that place and kill Conway. That would put you both out of the way permanently. And as your dutiful wife, I'd fall heir to the business.
Helen,
and that's why I called Drummond in, so everything would look right.
But it didn't turn out that way, did it, Mrs. Sanders?
No, but this way will do just as well. I'll still get everything I planned for. Yes, I can see the fire's working its way down here fast, so I'd better get started. Victor, you'll be first. My loving husband will be the first of you to go.
Oh! All this changed your plan.
Oh,
nice shooting, Billy.
Oh, I say, it was just a shoulder wound.
Don't be so regretful about it. The mistake will take off where you left off.
How did he get here?
It'll be a pleasure answering that one, Mrs. Sanders. You see, I was somewhat suspicious of you last night when you came to me for help. When I called the sanitarium to check on your husband's escape, they told me that he'd broken out at 9 o'clock. You were in my house at 10. It would have been physically impossible for you to get from Crystal Lake to my place in less than 2 hours. Therefore, you must have known in advance of your husband's plan to escape. And that's about it, Mrs. Sanders. Now, let's get out of here before we're all broiled. I sit here in the boat as it skims over the lake toward the mainland. Once again, I turn to look back at the fire raging on the island. And I think of that flame-swept place as a funeral pyre. And I think, too, of the strange adventure which has just ended.